Hello and welcome to the Life Church Canton podcast. My name is Jared Van Voorst. I'm one of the pastors here. Thank you so much for joining us once again today. If you're a new time guest with us, we'd love to invite you to fill out a connect card on our show page or our website, lifecanton.org, so that we can help you get connected. We've been in a series called New Life, and that started back in Easter, and this one is going to be the last installment of that series, where we're talking about new life in doubt, looking at the story of Thomas in John chapter 20. Also, I want to invite you to consider prayerfully giving generously to Life Church and helping our mission and vision to go forward, specifically in the area of community support. We've been focusing this last month on mental health and loneliness and putting together groups for people to connect with one another and help each other in solidarity and care for one another well. But also that takes a cost in terms of food and childcare. And so your giving makes an impact in that way. So please consider that. But for now, please enjoy this message.
Welcome. For those of you watching online, listening later on the podcast, we just sang this song, Nothing Else Will Do. I want you to process that statement for just a second, because some of you maybe have come into the room or are listening online and you're like, I don't know if I believe that. I don't know. There might be some other things that please me, that fulfill all of my desires. I'm not really sure about this whole Jesus thing yet. If that's you, you are in the right place. You are in a safe space with all of your questions, your doubts, your concerns. We're going to be talking about that today, actually, so it makes sense. But I want to say welcome to any of you who are maybe new here, here for the first time. My name is Jared. I'm one of the pastors. Welcome to Life Church. We are glad that you are here, and we hope that you experience a sense of belonging. And the best way to do that is by filling out a Connect card. So there's going to be a QR code that comes up on the screen, and you can scan that with your phone, and then fill out some information on there, and then we'll reach out to you with some next steps to help you get connected. If you have any questions about that, visit us out in the lobby, and we'll be happy to get you connected there as well. I want to get into the message in just a second, but there's some low-hanging fruit that we have to address first, okay? Are there NFL fans in the room? Detroit? Okay. A little concerned about how much cheering there was for NFL fans, more so than worship, but we'll get to that. Any Michigan fans, for example? Okay. All right. Any J.J. McCarthy fans? Okay, so then by default, you would have to be a Vikings fan, just like me, to support your team, and now we can be friends and you can be nice to me, okay? So that's what we need to get out of the way. Let's get into the series, the things that actually matter, a little bit more. We are in a series called New Life. This is the last one that we're talking about, and I hope that you have enjoyed this. And I'll say this too, for those of you who are a little bit newer to church, or maybe you were even hesitant to come today. Because we recognize that sometimes walking into a church takes a level of boldness, a level of courage, because you're not sure, what do I do with my hands? Like, who do I talk to? Should I talk to anybody? Where do I sit? Are they going to judge me? What are they going to say? And if that's you, we're going to have you come up on stage right now and just announce all of your sins. No, that's not going to work, because we'll start with me, all right? That's hard to deal with, to walk into a new church, and I appreciate you for doing that and your willingness to do that. But what we've done throughout this series is talk about new life, and it started on Easter, and we talked about this idea that sometimes we view Easter as, oh, it's all, you know, chocolate bunnies and rainbows and all of these good things, and it is that, but it messes with our ideas about what the actual Easter story was all about. And so we actually have these conflicting things that happen in Easter, or in new life. There's new life in unknowns. There's new life in sort of a new normal that comes with a level of risk in following Jesus, the resurrected Jesus. There's new life in fear as well. We talked about that last week with Vincent. We also talked about new life in sadness. And those things can still exist both at the same time. Today, we're talking about new life in doubts. And if you're familiar with the scripture and the story where we have been, you kind of know where the story is going, and we're going to talk about that. So we are going to be in John chapter 20. John chapter 20, verses 24 to 29. If you want to go there, you can. But let me just ask you this question. What do we do with doubt? Is doubt okay? Are we allowed to have our doubts? Are we allowed to have questions? Or are we supposed to have 100% certainty at all times and never give up, right? There's some question there. There's maybe some nuance there. There's some complexity there. And where is Jesus at with our doubts and with our questions? Is he okay with that? Or is he looking at us like, you better get it together. You better figure it out. Otherwise, you can't be in my church or you can't be in my family. Is that what Jesus is all about? Well, we're going to look at this story together. And if you've grown up in church, you've probably seen this story. Even if you haven't grown up in church, you've probably heard some of the terms that come from this story. So let's look at it. John chapter 20, verses 24 to 29. It says this: one of the 12 disciples, Thomas, nicknamed the twin, was not with the others when Jesus came. They told him, "We have seen the Lord." But he replied, "I won't believe it unless I see the nail wounds in his hands and put my fingers into them and place my hand into the wound in his side." 8 days later, the disciples were together again, and this time Thomas was with them. The doors were locked. But suddenly, as before, Jesus was standing among them. "Peace be with you," he said. And then he said to Thomas, "Put your finger here. Look at my hands. Put your hand into the wound in my side. Don't be faithless any longer. Believe." "My Lord and my God," Thomas exclaimed. Then Jesus told him, "You believe because you have seen me. Blessed are those who believe without seeing." If you've grown up in the church, you've probably seen this story. And you've probably heard the term that comes from this story. What do we call the character in this story? We call him, you all said it, Doubting Thomas, right? He's doubting that this is real. He's doubting that new life could exist. And I even entitled this message, New Life in Doubt, intentionally. But you know what's funny? The word doubt never even shows up in the scripture. It doesn't show up in the English text, but even if you look at the Greek, which is how this is written, the Greek word for doubt isn't in here. So I actually don't think we should be calling them Doubting Thomas. I know I'm messing with like thousands of years of church history and scholars, and you're like, who's this guy? Like, how does he get to decide that? Just take my word for it, okay? I think we should change his name. I don't think he should be Doubting Thomas anymore. I think he should be called Rejecting Thomas or Unbelieving Thomas. He doesn't have doubts. He straight up rejects it. He does not believe it. There's a difference between doubting and believing, or unbelieving, I should say, or rejecting this. Now, you might say, well, doubt and rejection are basically the same thing, right? They're kind of the same thing. Maybe if you have doubts, you have some questions. If you reject it, well, you still have questions and you're not okay with it. There's a little bit more that we could talk about, I think, in terms of the difference between doubt and rejection. Let's use a very simple example. Since football's on everybody's mind, let's just go there for a second, okay? Let's talk about last year's Lions. Yep, I get a reaction already. You're happy about this image. This is one of the images from this last year. If I were to ask you kind of toward the middle or end of the year, I'm not a Lions fan. I'm a Vikings fan, so I didn't have much to talk about. I'll admit it. So I was talking to all of you and saying, what are you thinking? How you feeling about the Lions? Are you feeling good? All right. And I would ask, do you think that they're going to get to the Super Bowl? Now, many of you were very excited about the possibility. Some of you still, because you're Lions fans and you know what it's like, are like, I don't know, I kind of doubt it, but we'll see, right? I doubt it, but we'll see, is a response that I got most of the time. Now, you had enough evidence to believe that going to the Super Bowl was a possibility, right? You still had some questions, you had some doubts, but there was enough there for you to be like, yeah, it's believable, it's doable. Let's rewind to 2 years ago, Lions. A little bit different. Little bit different feeling. There's no doubts here. This is straight up rejection. If I were to ask you midway through the year for the Lions season 2 years ago, and I were to come to you and say, hey, do you think they could, you know, make it to the Super Bowl? You'd be like, shut up, walk away, don't talk to me. You'd straight up reject it. There is a difference between doubt and unbelief and rejection. Doubts assume that there is still some belief there, but with some questions. Rejection? There's no belief. There's no belief. You don't believe that this is going to happen. The opposite of faith is not doubt. The opposite of faith is unbelief. This is what the story of Thomas is all about. He straight up does not believe. He doesn't just have a few questions about this. He straight up says, I don't believe. I won't believe. He is not wavering. He doesn't have any questions. His mind is made up. Now, some of you might say, if you've grown up in the church, now hold on a second, Pastor. I think Thomas does have some doubts. He's still leaving room for the possibility that this could be real, because he gives that really important word, unless, right? I won't believe unless. Let's look at verse 25, the second part of verse 25. Just a second, he replied, I won't believe unless. Unless what? Unless I see the nail wounds in his hands, put my fingers into them, and place my hands into the wound in his side. So there's a condition there. Maybe there's the room for belief. There's a possibility for belief. But see, I actually don't think that that's what's going on in this statement. I think, bear with me for a moment, I think Thomas is actually being sarcastic. I think he's being sarcastic here. And here's why I think that. I think he's messing with them a little bit. I think he's like, oh, okay, sure. Yeah, I'll touch his body, his wounds. I'll see what that's all about. Some of you, maybe because of your cultural background, you don't have the spiritual gift of sarcasm like I do. Let me just give you an example of what I'm talking about. Like if my wife comes to me and says, hey, babe, do you want to take a Zumba class with me? And my response is, oh, yeah, sign me up. I don't mean, oh, yeah, sign me up. No, nobody needs to see all that. Like, I don't have those kind of moves. I don't have hips, for one. Like, that's not going to work out for me. I'm not going to sign up for this class. But I'm going to say, oh, yeah, sign me up. Because what am I doing? I'm communicating something more than just the words that I'm saying. I'm saying, don't sign me up. And in fact, don't ever ask me to sign up for a Zumba class, right? There is more to it. And sarcasm is a rhetorical or a literary tool that people use to get a message across more than just what they're saying. You know this, right? You know how sarcasm works. Many of you use it. I'm waiting for like a sarcastic response, but we're not going to go there. So here's why I think that that's the case for Thomas. Sometimes we got to get this image out of our minds that, oh, it's the Bible, ooh, you know, they're perfect and all they do and all they say and they have it all figured out at all times. No, they're human. They're humans. They're flawed. They're imperfect. I think sarcasm, we need to leave room for the possibility of sarcasm even in the scriptures, okay? So go with me to another story, if you will. And if you don't know it, that's okay. I'll just explain the background. There's another story in the book of John in chapter 11 where there's this horrible news. Jesus and his disciples are away from all of the hubbub in Jerusalem and the surrounding area. They're trying to get some safety and some separation from all of the things that are going on. And what has happened, though, is they find out that one of their good friends, Lazarus, has died. And Jesus is close with Lazarus. This is horrible news. And you would think, well, I need to go. I need to go back. I need to go be with the family. But he doesn't. He doesn't. He stays where he is for a couple days. In fact, the disciples that are with Jesus at the time, they're good with this. They're good. They don't want to go back anywhere near Jerusalem. And in fact, where the death of Lazarus took place is in Bethany, which is kind of like a suburb of Jerusalem. It's super close by. And so if they were to go back to Jerusalem, because things were starting to get a little bit more tense, Jesus' life and his disciples' lives were at risk. If they go back to Jerusalem, there's no guarantee that they're going to be safe. So the disciples are good with Jesus staying put and not traveling back to Bethany to go be with Lazarus' family, okay? That's just a little bit of the background of the story. But eventually, a couple days later, finally Jesus decides, okay, let's go. Let's go. Thomas has an interesting reply. He's with the disciples in this moment. I want to show you the section in John 11, 16, and it says this, Thomas, nicknamed the twin, same character that we're talking about in John 20, nicknamed the twin, said to his fellow disciples, let's go too and die with Jesus. That's sarcastic. He doesn't actually want to go die with Jesus. So try to imagine the tone in his voice. Jesus says, all right, let's go back and let's go be with Lazarus or the family of Lazarus. Imagine the tone being sarcastic. Oh, sure, let's go too and die with Jesus. He doesn't mean, let's go too and be martyrs. Now, some scholars actually believe, no, he does. He's being faithful. He's being courageous. He's being bold. Thomas is ready to be a martyr for his faith. I don't think that's true, actually, based on the experience of what we see in Thomas, both in this story and leading up to it. See, what happens is Thomas doesn't want anything to do with Jesus when he gets arrested. If Thomas truly meant what he said, let's go to and die with Jesus, if he truly had the courage and the faith and the willingness to go be a martyr for his faith along with Jesus, then why does he run away in fear when Jesus is arrested? And then why now, in this story that we've been reading in chapter 20, why now does he have such difficulty believing that Jesus is who he said he was? If, in fact, he was bold enough to say, yes, let's go too and die with Jesus. I believe, and other scholars believe as well, that actually Thomas is being sarcastic here. He's not ready for this. And so if that's the case there, then we fast forward back to John chapter 20. Let's look at verse 25 again. He says, I won't believe unless I see the nail wounds in his hands, put my fingers into them, and place my hand into the wound in his side. I think he's being sarcastic. Here's why. Think about the story that you heard last week. If you were here or you heard Vincent's message, he talked about the story that takes place right before this story. And what happened is Jesus appears to his disciples and they are behind locked doors, right? Thomas isn't with them at that moment. And so Jesus visits them in this room where the doors are locked. They are terrified. And a little note that's important to pay attention to is it's evening. It's pretty late in the evening. Now in this story, we're even later into the evening. This story is that same night. And now the disciples are approaching Thomas. Thomas is with them, and they're talking about this situation. They're expressing to Thomas what they just experienced, but it's late in the night. Think about how you are late in the night, right? Probably a little cranky, probably a little annoyed. And especially if somebody comes to you and wants to talk to you at 2, 3 in the morning with some kind of crazy information, my guess is that you don't have your second wind and you're up and ready to go and say, tell it all to me. Let's go. So imagine it's even later in the evening. Thomas is sarcastic, is having difficulty with this whole faith thing, with this whole believing in Jesus the Messiah, or certainly Jesus the resurrected one. And the disciples go on to tell him this story that, hey, we got to see Jesus. He's resurrected and he showed us his wounds. And now Thomas has a response. I won't believe. I straight up reject this as a possibility unless, what was it you guys said? He showed you his wounds. Okay, tell you what, I'll do you one better. I won't believe unless I put my hands in his wounds and touch his wounds and put my fingers in his side. Yeah, that's what I'll do. Then I'll believe. Cool? Good talk. Good night. I'm going back to bed. I think it's important not just to read the words on a page, but to understand the humanity of Thomas. To understand that there's some sarcasm here. He's tired, he's cranky, it's been a long night, it's been a long day, it's been a long weekend. And he has a little bit of sarcasm in him, a little bit of edge. He doesn't doubt, he straight up rejects that this is a possibility. And then, that's it. Nothing else happens that night. Nothing else happens. He is just stuck in his rejection of the situation. That's important to notice. See, because when we see the scriptures, we don't get these breaks all of the time. Sometimes it just goes right into the next story, and we can't fathom how the timing of all of this works. But he is stuck in rejection and unbelief for a long time. You know what verse 26 says? Let's look at that together. It says, 8 days later. For 8 days. If you're struggling with unbelief, if you're struggling with some bit of anxiety, if you're struggling with some kind of unknown or fear or doubt or rejection or whatever it is, whether it's faith-related or not, and you don't have any new information for 8 days, what's all going through your mind in that time? All the different stories, all the different narratives, all the different lies that you start to make up in your head. When the fear, the doubt, the unknown, the rejection of things, there's no solution. There's nothing to clean it all up. There's nothing to tie it all up with a nice, neat bow. Think of the place you are at mentally, physically, emotionally, psychologically. For 8 days, nothing happens. But then, they're locked in the same room. They're still afraid. And suddenly, even in their fear, even in their doubts, even in their rejection, Jesus shows up and says, what? Peace be with you. He doesn't arrive after 8 days and say, come on, guys, get it together. Knock it off. Can't you get it through your thick heads? Why don't you believe? Why are you having such a difficult time with this? You spent 3 years with me. Wasn't that enough? Didn't I give you enough evidence to believe? And Thomas, I got a bone to pick with you. In fact, Thomas, you're about to have a come to Jesus moment, literally. He doesn't say that. He says, peace be with you. See, I think most of the narratives that we have in our heads about what God says to us is more of that whole line of speaking that I just did, like, get it together. Come on, why don't you believe? Why are you having difficulty with this? Why can't you figure this out? Why can't you get your life together? I think that that's how most of the people in this room and watching online, I think that that's what our view of God is. That's how we think he talks to us. And then it shuts us down and further reinforces the shame and the guilt and the anxiety, the depression. And then we feel like, well, why would I show up to church? If that's what God says to me, well, all those godly people, those Christian people at church, they're probably going to say the same things about me. In fact, the moment I walk into the room, they're just going to be able to see it in me. So I'm going to stay over here and I'm going to hide and I'm not going to talk to anybody because I'm afraid that they might judge me in the same way that God judges me. This is where we go. This is where we go in our heads. This is where we go in our hearts because we make things up in the scriptures that aren't there. And instead, Jesus says, peace be with you, even in your rejection of me, even in your doubts, even in your fears, even in your sin and your mistakes and your accidents and your straight up just murder of me, basically, is what Jesus is saying. You abandoned me in my time of greatest need. Peace be with you. Is that the voice of God? Is that the words of God that you're hearing in your minds? I pray to God that it is. And I recognize all of the barriers that so many people in this room and watching online have had to overcome to sort of suppress or minimize that unhealthy voice of God that maybe you've been fed for years. Get it together. You just got to pray more. You got to pray harder. You got to believe more. You got to have more faith. Even if you have faith like a mustard seed, Jesus said. You know how big a mustard seed is? Tiny. It's tiny. Yeah, it's tiny. It's super small. If you have even that bit of faith, you can move mountains. Do you have that kind of faith? And even if it's smaller than a mustard seed, maybe it even feels like it's non-existent. Guess what? Jesus says, peace be with you. And you know what I think is most fascinating? Is this next part in verse 27. This is how he validates his peace. He doesn't push Thomas away. He doesn't say, hey, by the way, Thomas, I don't know if you remember this or not, but I'm all-knowing. I see things even when I'm like miles away or in another, you know, universe. But I heard what you said about, you know, where to put your hands and your fingers and everything. And so I tell you what, you're out. You're done. You don't get to be part of this thing anymore. No, he doesn't say that. Go ahead. Put your finger here. Look at my hands. Put your hand. Do it. Do all the things. Do whatever it is that you need to do. You can do it. He doesn't rebuke him. He doesn't correct him. He doesn't push him away. He invites him in. Now, if you can get over kind of the weirdness of that, like maybe some of you are kind of germaphobes and you're like, I'm not good with blood. So if Jesus were to come to me and be like, here, put your finger in like my gaping wound in my side. You'd be like, I'm good. I believe. You know what? I'm fine. You're good. I believe in you. Okay. If we can get over the weirdness of that, what I need you to see is the heart of God in the midst of it. Because what happens in the story before, where the other disciples are together and they are behind locked doors, Jesus shows up with them. That alone would be a little traumatic, a little freaky, right? But yet he shows up in his resurrected state, and all he does is show them his wounds in their fears, in their doubts, in their sadness, in their confusion. But in straight up rejection, Jesus shows up and says, I'm not just going to let you see my wounds, I'm going to let you feel them. Touch them. Touch me, Thomas. There is a greater level of intimacy and vulnerability even in Thomas's rejection of God's move. If you have doubts, if you have questions, if you straight up do not believe in God, God does not push you away. He actually invites you in even closer. And says, you can touch me. You can be with me. You can do whatever you need to do. You need evidence? Okay, that's fine. And it's after that level of intimacy that then Jesus says, don't be faithless any longer. Believe. Most preachers, and this was my experience growing up, most preachers make this the primary function of messages. They start out with, get it together. Why don't you have enough faith? Believe. Stop your unbelief, stop your faithlessness, and believe. That's not the order of how Jesus does this. He establishes, there's already a relationship. There's already been moments of Thomas's sarcasm, Thomas's rejection, Thomas's unbelief, and then it hits its pinnacle in this story. And even in the midst of that, even in the midst of his primary rejection of Jesus' resurrection, he says, come. Touch me. And after that, then he says, now believe, Thomas. I think there's actually a gentleness to the statement of Jesus. I think there's an invitation for Thomas to do something different. And because of all of that, how does Thomas respond? My Lord and my God. Most of the other responses have been, my Lord. Thomas is different. My Lord and my God. Almost like there's like another level of belief here. It almost seems like Thomas is all in. He's got everything that he needs for this to go on, for his faith to start off in a renewed way. And in fact, a lot of people believe that Thomas was the one that actually went on to be a missionary into India and was ultimately martyred for his faith. So even though his statement of sarcasm in John chapter 11 was, let's go to and die with Jesus, it actually is fulfilled in his mission. He does go to die with Jesus. I don't know what statements you're hearing from God, and I don't know what statements you're giving back to God, or if you're even like, God, I'm not even sure you exist, so who am I actually even talking to? Maybe I should just shut up, because I don't even believe this anyway. God says, come on in. It's okay. I could take your rejection. I could take your unbelief. That doesn't threaten me. I'm bigger than all of that. Is that how you view God? And can you get to this place of even if it's just the tiniest bit of faith, tiniest bit of willingness, even if you're demanding evidence, that's okay. To be able to say, my Lord and my God. I don't know where all this is going to take me, but my Lord and my God. There's ownership there. There's intimacy there. There's possession there. Here's what I want us to do and to take away for this week is simply this, to believe. Believe. Now, I wrestled with this because, as I said, I grew up in churches where that was the primary function of the message, is just, you know, say all of the things that you need to say in your sermon, just get them to the point where you can now give them an opportunity to believe for the first time, to do an altar call. And some of you grew up in churches like that, and I'm not bashing that. There's a purpose for that. There's a place for that. It was not a positive experience for me. And it was not a positive experience for a lot of people in my generation who felt like the message of belief was straight up fear and manipulation. And so you do this whole message about Jesus, and then you get to the end of the message, and then the pastor would stand there and start to talk about all of the craziness and all of the concerns and all of the consequences and the implications for your belief or your lack of belief. And it was all centered around this concept of heaven and hell. And so there was all kinds of fear and manipulation. You don't want to go to hell, do you? Well, believe. Wow, what a compelling message of God's love and grace. My entire faith is built around the afterlife. What a waste of time. What a worthless message. If all this is for is just some paradise after I die someday, but actually has nothing to do with the life I live in this body, in this place, what is the point of that? And most messages that I think a lot of us grew up in, if you grew up in church, was a fear-based, manipulative message of belief. Belief so that you don't go to hell. Church, our God is so much more great than that. So much more loving than that. There's so much more depth to Him than that. And plus, that's not the image of the story that we see in John chapter 20. There's no fear and manipulation with Jesus. There's intimacy. There's relationship. Come in love. Invitation. Even in rejection. If you've got straight up questions and rejection and unbelief in your life right now, you belong. You are okay. You are okay. And maybe you have a demand for evidence, but I will tell you this. Would you give it a try? Would you give Jesus a shot? What do you have to lose? Not so that you can have fire insurance and escape hell. That's not the point. We could talk about that, right? Like, we could talk about Jesus' message of heaven and hell, and He does talk about those kinds of things. But there's so much more depth to what Jesus is doing. He is inviting you into a this life kind of intimate relationship. And so don't just believe, but also be here. The way we supplement this belief is not by going off and doing this thing on our own. That's actually not the message of Christianity. It's just me and Jesus. That's not how it works, actually. But be here. Jesus says, be here to Thomas. No, come here. Come. You want to touch it? Go for it. I'm not afraid. Are you afraid? Let's go. You can touch my side. You can put your hands here. You can do all of the things that you need to do. The most modern day equivalent that I can give to you is, in order to enhance your belief, is to be here. Physically here. Be here in church. Some of you watch online, and that's okay. And some of you can't be here, and so you're grateful to watch online. But if you've been watching online for a month, 2 months, and you have the ability to be here. Not so that we can put butts in seats. I'm not interested in padding our numbers. That is not my concern. My concern, my hope, is that when you are here, when you be here physically, it's an opportunity to enhance your belief because you see the love and the grace and the mercy expressed in others. And you can care for one another, and you can support one another. But here's the last thing, and this one is super important. Don't just be here, but the next one is be honest. Amen. Be honest. People are not here to judge you. If they are, then they're going to be the anomaly. One of these things is not like the other. So you can come here, you can be honest about your rejection, your unbelief, your doubts, your fears, your sadness, all of it, and we're all going to be in that together. But as we open up and as we are more honest with one another and not ashamed of those doubts, not ashamed of that unbelief, it actually enhances our belief and then wants us to be here even more. Amen. Be here. Be honest. And let that grow and elevate your belief. God is most visible, His resurrected self is most visible and most experienced with each other. The community is essential for Christian belief. You cannot do this on your own. It won't make sense. I want to invite you to stand if you are able. As I began the message, we had just come out of a song talking about Jesus being unlike anything else. I want nothing more than Jesus. And maybe at the beginning of the message, or even singing that song, that was a difficult place for you to be. Because maybe you're thinking, yeah, there are other things that I prefer. Jesus, I don't know, it just seems like, do I have to be all in to do that? Do I have to be like Thomas? Do I have to be a martyr for my faith? I don't know. I don't know. And I don't know what all in looks like for you. But just take the first next step. You don't have to see 10 years from now, 20 years from now. What does today look like? To be able to have the willingness to say, I want nothing more than just Jesus. And then let's sing this song as a prayer.
Once again, thank you so much for listening to this message. I hope that something stuck out to you. And if you're struggling with belief or doubt or questions or rejection or skepticism in any kind of way, just know that you belong and you're probably experiencing very normal things, and that's okay. And we welcome you. We welcome your questions. We welcome you to take this opportunity to explore things as well. And in fact, we do have a course called Life Journey, and within one of those courses is something called Explore, and it's an opportunity to get with other people who have a lot of questions about the Christian faith and about what Jesus is all about. And so I encourage you the next time that is available to check that out and to maybe attend if you haven't done that before. Lastly, again, I want to remind you to fill out a Connect card, and we would love to reach out to you and help you take some next steps to get more involved here. Other than that, we hope you have a wonderful rest of your day, and we'll see you back here soon. We will be starting a brand new series called Neurofaith, about faith and the brain. Have a great day.